Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, isn't that exciting?
2015.
Hey, like that. A little bit of...
You're getting fancy.
There we go.
Yep, the beginning of the end for this show.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Anyway, what's going on, man? What are you doing for Cinco de Mayo? Any Mexican food, tequila, anything? What's going on with that?
No, it's a phony baloney celebration, let's face it.
What is the point of this holiday?
It's not Mexican independence or anything. It's just some, you know, some moment in Mexican history where they... You know, almost took over.
Almost took over. They took over.
I can tell you something. I don't know what would be the equivalent of the United States.
Probably like Flag Day.
Oh, Flag Day. Actually, well, maybe.
Maybe. How about?
We don't do a lot of parties on
Grandparents
Flag Day.
No, but this is an excuse for the restaurant. This is a hallmark card moment for restaurants.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's just marketing. It's a gimmick. Mm.
I saw that. I was driving around and I saw that. All the Mexican restaurants had lines on it. I figured this is the perfect day not to go to a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, what would you want to go today? It's dumb.
Oh, it's Cinco de Mayo.
I didn't know you had Mexican restaurants there. I thought they're all Cuban places.
No, we got that. But there's a lot of these Zona Fresca. There's
Chipotle.
All the chains. Yeah, Zola is chains. We don't get anything real here. But a lot of things are going on around the world. The markets did sell off in a big way today. There was some big sell-off in China. We're seeing that there's an absolute crazy move in bonds for Europe. You know, we saw those negative yields. We'll talk about that. But one of the stupidest things I saw this week, I thought I'd start with this, is two men were killed Sunday in a Dallas suburb after gunfire outside a building where an exhibit that featured cartoon drawings of Islam's prophet Muhammad were being held. So there's this event where all these people came together to look at cartoons of the prophet Muhammad. Now, if you know anything in life, you know that people get pretty pissed off when you start drawing the prophet Muhammad as a cartoon.
Oh, it was done on purpose. Yeah, the woman who organized the event just likes to stir up stuff.
Oh, she did.
You know, it just to prove that, you know, you can't be, you know, there's no free speech or something. I'm not sure what the point of it was.
Yeah, well, two people got killed. Stupid. You
know, but they gunned down those two guys.
I know.
Something. In Texas, they carry weapons.
Yeah, not a good place to do it. Texas is probably not the perfect place to do this. Probably
not the perfect place to try to come in and, you know, think you're the hot shots.
Yep.
Yeah, that's for sure.
The Arizona conference is going on this week, or the early part of this week, last couple of days, and this is an event that raises money for some charity, but basically all of these hedge fund managers, institutional managers come in with their best ideas, whether it's a short or a long, and you have guys like Einhorn come in from Greenlight Capital, and you have Ackman, and you have all these different, you know, hoo-ha monkey monks that come in, and they come in with their best idea. Now, what I do is I follow them on Twitter. I put the hashtag Irisone and I follow it on different places because what happens is when they mention a stock's name, it goes bonkers. A couple of years ago, this is where one of the times that Ackman came in with his whole Herbalife short thesis.
Right, we've talked about.
And this year, Greenlight Capital came in. He was kind of interesting. He, young guy, very nasal fella. And he was trying to be funny, which he's not.
Do you go to these events or did they stream them?
They stream a lot of they didn't used to stream them, but Bloomberg was streaming them. And you can these days you can stream anything or find out anything through whether it's Twitter or other social media or blog posts.
Microsoft's got an event going on in Chicago called Ignite.
Yeah.
And I was watching the stream and it's gonna go on for another couple of days. It's fascinating because the way they've done it, the way they do it, you might as well be there. I mean, if you were there, I think it's a waste of time to go. The stream covers everything.
It's kind of like the evolution of sporting events. Like, why would you want to go sit in Miami in the heat and watch the Dolphins play where you can't barely see anything and then you have to park and you have to pay and all that? You see it on TV. Much easier. Same thing.
A lot of people never got a clue. They're still going to those games.
Yeah. I've been to I had a season tickets at one time. My buddy got me season tickets, and it was in such a location that every time people stood up for any reason, or they walked down the center of the stairs to get to seats, or the guy with the popcorn and the cotton candy and the beer was walking by, you couldn't see a thing.
I know those seats.
Couldn't see a thing.
Yeah, you're in some situation where so it's not people in front of you standing up, but people to your side going down the aisle, which blocks the whole thing. And if they stand there for 1 second, you miss the whole game.
Right. So I said to my buddy, this is horrible. Now, the good news was, I felt compelled to go with him all the time. The good news was, halfway through the season, he moved and he lost his tickets. I said, thank God. Thank God I don't have to go anymore. That was it. Gets a little crazy there. Gets a little claustrophobic, too. When it rains over there, man, they just start packing in the hallways. One time, I swear I was going to be crushed.
Oh, because of the lightning strikes?
Yeah. Have you ever had one of those times where you've been in a situation in such a crowd that you feel like you're going to be crushed? Pretty scary.
Not really. I mean, almost when I was a kid in school, when they had riots. But I've long since studied the situation and know what to do.
What were they rioting about?
Stay out of that situation, for starters.
Yeah. What were they rioting? Where did you go to school?
Cal Berkeley.
Oh, they're always rioting there. There's always something going on there, isn't it? Isn't that the place that if you want to go, like? You know,
well, they put a stop to it by not letting white students in anymore. It's all Asians.
Oh.
Mostly from China, and they're not going to do anything to mess up.
Oh. Just in case they have to be deported again?
I mean, there's some things that take place, but it's not like the good old days.
Hmm. Not all the good old days where you get crushed and beaten once a week.
Crushed, beaten, and gassed.
Yeah, it used to be so harmless, the potential for getting killed, you know? I mean, these days you get gunned down. Back then, it was a slow thing, and you still had a way to get out. Yeah. Anyway, so the Irish Zone Conference, you could follow this. You were able to follow this on various various news streams or Twitter or whatever it was. Anyway, so this guy at Greenlight Capital, he starts talking about the whole fracking, you know, the oil and gas companies and fracking. And he says there's one company in particular. Mm-hmm. We call it the Mother Fracker. Now, I use this fracking word as a substitute, like Obama did for bucket in his, you saw that on his correspondence dinner evening where he said, you know, what do you think? Oh, we'll just put it in the bucket, you know, as a funny thing, not saying the word that is not allowed to be said.
So this guy's got the Mother Fracker?
Mother Fracker. So he goes on to say that, oh, you know, this company, they changed a few things in their footnotes. And if you look at the price of oil and what it cost them to drill and this and that, and this whole thing, you know, what it cost to bring up and how they're losing money and how they can't make any money until oil's back to like 100. It was, and what was the stock? It was PXD, I believe, was the symbol. The name is escaping me. I believe it was PXD. Anyway, you can look that up while I'm talking about this. So the stock, you know, immediately drops. I mean, just goes down from like 130 to 122 or something like that. And then it kind of came back a little bit. And there's a lot of people then after the fact, oh, I think that Einhorn's wrong because oil's doing this and that. And then a few of these other guys come on and talk about things. It didn't have the effect that it usually has when you see a stock get whacked. Usually you see these things get, I mean, hurt pretty badly.
Pioneer Natural Resources?
Yeah, that's it. Pioneer Natural Resources. And it was down again today, a few percent.
That is $163.
Yeah. It dropped. Did you see that?
Down from what? From the
2-something.
Wow. Huh.
He thinks it's going to be down to like $70 stock. Should be cut in half if you look at all the variables that go into this.
Well, so, I'm on board with that thinking.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I think earnings were today, and it really didn't do anything bad for the stock. Stock was, I think, up, or maybe, was it down today? Maybe been down by the end of the day.
It was as high as, it was down. It was as high as 225, 230. So, back in this year, this year.
We don't know when they started shorting this. He says, you know, he has a short position here. We don't know when they started shorting it, how much they're short, if they're still shorting into it.
It went as low as 131 before it came back up to 175. And so I would assume they shorted it. If they didn't short it at 175, they may have shorted it. I don't know where they could have shorted it.
Well, one of the things that happens now these days when these activists and these hedge fund managers get get in the public and start talking about this is the other guys kind of smell blood. They know this guy is short. What are they going to do? They're going to try to go ahead and, you know, do what they can to, you know, do a
shake them out of the bush.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's going on this week. There's a few other conferences going on. The SALT conference is going on also. That's in, I think that's in Vegas this weekend, or usually in Vegas. A lot of hedge fund managers get together there, come up with their ideas. Not the same kind of situation that is billed with the Irisone conference, where, you know, everybody's going to come in with their best idea. Acme came in with something, talked about Jarden. You know, this is the company that makes food processors, crock pots, Mr. Coffee. You know, it sells all those kinds of products as a, you know, one of the perpetually undervalued stock, as he said. Stock was up about 5% on those comments and then came back down today, back down to reality. Also, another stock that was moving today was, again, Salesforce. Now the hubbub is, oh, Microsoft may be making a bid. I find this highly questionable.
I find it impossible.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. Mark Benioff, I don't see him doing it, who is the CEO of Salesforce. Microsoft, no, I don't see him doing it either. The cost for this is, what, $50 billion, let's say? Easy.
There's no... And what would they do with it? For one thing, they'd have to... It's somewhat, but not completely humiliating, because it uses the Oracle database as its mechanism to do anything at all. And it works on a different kind of cloud than what Microsoft offers. And Microsoft would have to recode most of it, put so they could use the Microsoft SQL and whatever, you know, software they've got. I don't think they'd sit there letting it run on Oracle. It's not practical.
Do you think that Microsoft could take, I'm going to give you a number, $5 billion, $5 billion, and essentially, if they wanted to, recreate Salesforce 100%?
I think anyone could.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of vendors that work with Salesforce. There's a whole infrastructure.
But these guys are never doing it for that reason. They're doing it for the customer base. They're buying these people.
Yeah, exactly. And the ongoing revenue stream, et cetera. But I would just find it very difficult to fold that in due to not only personality conflicts, but the cost factor of it. And then on top of that, like you said, you know, they get the customers, but the customers have a lot of overlap as it is. You know, everybody's running Windows, maybe, you know, I guess it's cloud-based. You don't need to run Windows, but.
Well, no, but you need something on your machine, and it would be Windows.
Right.
And once you get into the cloud where you're using it all the time, you start to probably want to, you know, use one cloud. You're probably going to use Microsoft Windows 365, which is going to include a terabyte of online memory or cloud memory. And yeah, it's probably 75% crossover.
But you know what's interesting? One thing about Salesforce is this is a contact management system, or client relationship manager, if you will.
Yeah, CRM.
So one of the things that you do regularly with contacts and clients is what? You email them, right? Isn't that a lot of the mechanism of communication? Did you know that Salesforce does not have an embedded email client? In other words, right out of the box, you go to Salesforce, you put all your contacts in there. Let's say you have 50 contacts, right? You want to email them. Their email system is terribly clunky, horrible. There's no way to look at, there's no inbox. There's no such thing. You can't email to Salesforce. It doesn't happen. Now you can email out because they have some kind of clunky little HTML based.
Well, since I don't use Salesforce, I'm unfamiliar with this complaint.
Well, do you find that information that I just provided to you interesting?
I find it be screwy.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I never used Salesforce years ago was that it didn't have an integrated platform for email where you can do, for example, okay, show me all my emails for today, or show me the emails all from this one person, or show me a thread, or for that matter, give me an email. Let me look at an email. There's no such thing. There is no such thing. So what you have to do is one of a few things. One, you could use Microsoft Outlook, and they have these connectors. So what happens is that you use a Microsoft Outlook, or you could use Gmail for that matter. They have these connectors that kind of look inside, because the API, they look inside the Salesforce, and you do a logon credentialing and all, and then you can pull your contacts in and out. So you could technically use Gmail. Now that you're using Gmail, all the things like in, there's an area that says emails, let's call it, a little area inside of the contact. So all the emails should be able to sync back and forth. Okay. But there is no, but again, there is no inside of Salesforce, a place where you'd click email and look at your whole inbox. For example, you'd have to go to Gmail, or you'd have to go to Microsoft Outlook. Personally, I don't like Outlook at all. But really,
I am going to take a careful look at the new Outlook that comes with Microsoft Office 365, because I was watching this Ignite thing and they're lecturing everybody about all these new things they're doing. And I was very impressed. But I will buffer that comment by saying that I have seen demos and show off scripts before over the years. 99% of the time, it's like they show you how to do, oh, look at this. You can do this and that and this and that and this and that. And when you actually get the software and you try to do this and that and this and that, it doesn't work. I mean, it just never, it doesn't work.
It's does like the word guys,
yeah, mail, the guy who wrote the code can make it work.
Does the word mail merge put a,
I gave up on that years ago.
Does it put a little bit of a, your hair in your back of your neck start to stand up?
Slowly I turned. Doesn't work.
Well, this is the same kind of thing here. Like if you want to do a mail merge, you got to go through all these steps. You got to use Outlook and then somehow you have to find the contact. It's a very difficult process. Now, the third option, which we use, is there is an app that is free, actually, that kind of recreates a inbox inside of Salesforce. Connects to the contacts. It does all that. There's a couple of things in there I don't like, but it has little boxes you can create and little rules, and you can put, you know, send mail out and mail comes in. You got to, you know, work with your servers and all that. And it works pretty well. But I just keep on wondering, why doesn't it have this kind of capability? Because one of the things you want to do on a regular basis is mass mail and then follow up on it and stand alone.
Are you sure what your complaint is? 100 proofly,
100%. I've done a lot of research on this. And I finally caved in. And I said, okay, we'll do it. And I started using Outlook and I started freaking out. So we had to find another solution. There is no, what would it be called? There is no standard, or there is no email inbox in Salesforce.
Well, then what good is this thing?
There are other lookalike programs that have a much better email program that I've seen. But this one doesn't have it. And you have to, like I said, you have to just, people, I guess, use, well, I'll give you another example. If you're on, even with the program I have, okay, if I'm on the Salesforce app, the program, since it is a, since the app that I have, the plugin, if you will, for Salesforce, because it is a separate piece of Salesforce, I cannot look at my emails inside of that app. I have to go onto like a regular web page. Huh. Or for that matter, go onto the Salesforce web page on my phone on the regular site, not the mobile site. The emails don't, can't just quickly go through emails there. Crazy, huh?
Well, I have to look into this now.
Something that always perplexed me, but it would seem that...
Doesn't make sense.
Well, I think the reason why is they always wanted to make sure they didn't piss Microsoft off and they didn't piss off all these other providers and have their own email, which I don't know why, but they could have easily done it, but it's just not there. You check on this. You come back to me and check on this. All right, let's talk about the big fight of the week. Did you watch it?
No, God, no. I knew it was going to be. It's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it was a nothing.
Mayweather wanted to get 48, so he played... The on TV show character, he played this character called Floyd Mayweather Jr., the defensive boxer, who has developed, I have to say, both him and the old guy. What's the name of that older guy that boxes? He's in his 40s. I can't remember his name offhand. But anyway,
Holyfield?
No. The guy was still active.
George Foreman?
No. He's still active. He's a good boxer. He's not like some old guy. I'll think of his name maybe as we go along. But anyway, he plays this. He's got this. It's an invention. It's a very strange way of boxing, and you can't beat him. It's all defense.
Right. It's kind of it's just floating backwards,
and it's
dancing,
and it's very hard to hit him, but it's boring.
Yeah,
it's
boring.
Very boring to watch.
Yeah. So I was out at a couple of charity events, came home about 11:30 at night. And I said, oh, let me see if I can find the fight. Now, of course, you have to pay for this thing, right? So what I found was, I found some link somewhere in this whole thing called Periscope, which is a Twitter-owned...
Well, you found somebody streaming it?
There was a ton. Now, Periscope, this is, by the way, we were going to do a stream this evening of the show. We're going to do it next week. We'll try it out. It's a Twitter app, and basically it is a streaming video application where people can follow you and you can do your little video thing and all that. All these people... this is unbelievable, holding their iPhones up to the TV and streaming it, or up to their computer, wherever they had it. So I found a stream that was really good, and I just watched the whole fight.
Oh, did you now? That was nice.
Yeah, very nice.
I was looking for a stream. I gave up. But I knew it was going to be a boring fight, so I didn't care.
Well, the problem, though, is now you have this Periscope application, which is basically an iPhone or smartphone application. There's a couple of them. There's Meerkat. Basically... What happens here is, for those of you that don't know what this is that you can stream. So, for example, put it on your desk, face it to you, talk, and people can watch you all day for whatever reason. And there's a lot of boring people on this whole thing. I'm not sure why this is. I don't think it was built to have a 24-hour stream of someone's daily doings. And you could follow people and you could go on different streams and things or have a group kind of situation. But there's only one streamer, if you will, and everybody else watches. Now, what's interesting about this is if you think about this, this could be brought into concerts. It could be brought into movie theaters, if you're not caught. All sorts of places where you could stream now. And I think the privacy issues and the copyright issues are going to be a real problem here. These streams were trying to be shut down, and there was all sorts of lawsuits that were trying to shut down all of these various streams, a lot of the pirate sites. But Periscope is going to have a real problem, I think.
Well, yeah, and it should.
Yep. It's an interesting... And by the way, I have no idea how Twitter is going to monetize this. Because there's enough things on the screen already that... What are you going to do, put an ad somewhere and just block more area?
I have no idea. It's funny.
Now, did we talk about the Twitter earnings?
Yeah, on the last show.
Oh, that was something. Yeah, that was something. Still going down. I think it's at $38 or $39 a share. Tried to move up a little bit today and then just got cracked with the rest of the market. Okay, so, but I thought the most interesting thing was about the fight, just to go back to the economics of this. You know, we're talking about a $3 or $350 million purse, which is, I'm just saying, slight. I don't know why boxing, I just don't understand why boxing has such a high payout. It doesn't seem logical.
Well, I've never figured out why golf has a high payout.
You're not talking about a $300 million purse, for God's sakes.
No, that's true. That's a big one.
And these guys are playing for 4 days.
Well, there's a couple of things that need to be noted. I don't know how many people have picked this up, but Floyd Mayweather Jr. shouldn't even be seen as a boxer. He promotes his own fights, which is like a giveaway that he's something of a business genius.
Well, anybody that can make he got 60%, so he got 100. Well, for his whole deal, he got 180 plus million dollars to dance around. Took a few shots, okay, I'll give you that, but to dance around for what, half hour? What is it?
It's 3 minutes around, 12 rounds, so it's not even that. So it's a little more than a half an hour.
Yeah. Half hour, probably very difficult. I probably couldn't make it 5 seconds.
No, of course you could. Nobody can. Yeah. It takes some work.
Yeah, exactly. It does. But that's his deal. And now, I mean, this guy, why he would need to fight ever again, I don't know. But I thought the other guy was pretty good. The other guy was trying really hard to punch him. He really was. He was really
style
trying hard.
Boxing, yeah. The defensive style that he has, specifically his counter punching, is it's so difficult to beat. He's never lost a fight.
Yep. Well, anyway, economic benefits of the fight. We're talking about $500 to $750 million that generated probably from all the various things that were brought in. A lot of it went to the boxers. You know, you got the pay-per-view, you got the shirts, you got the God knows what else is it. Pretty interesting for a one-day event, or actually for a one-night event, a couple of hours.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating flow of money over the one thing.
The only thing that is more annoying about the pre-fight, all the stuff that goes on and the talking, you know, is that horse racing pre-horse race deal. Hours and hours of horse racing.
You're talking about the Kentucky Derby.
Oh.
The Kentucky Derby starts at like, what, 11 in the morning? on network television, yeah. And goes 5 hours, and then they have a 3-minute race and end the show. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
It's horrible.
What are they doing? I mean,
they're showing all the different horses, and you would get to meet the owners, and you get to listen to the guy who blows the trumpet, what his life was all about. It's ludicrous.
Yep. By the way, the ref for the fight got $25,000.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think. I mean, putting that all in perspective, you think they could have thrown the guy $100,000. I'm just saying.
He may have tipped him. He may have tipped him. Mayweather may have dropped $100,000 on the guy. Well, he wouldn't do that.
That'd be bribery, I guess.
Yeah, $25,000.
Seems a little light. And I think each of the judges got like $15,000 or something like that.
Attention.
Yeah. Now, Tesla announced a new whole house battery. We called that. We called that. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yep. We did. Whole house battery. So I guess they're going to be combining it with the whole solar deal.
Yeah, it's part of it. I think it's all tied in with SolarCity. And the problem that everyone's having now in certain parts of the country is that the power companies, there's a special on this. I don't know where it was. I think I clipped it. It was some news story, or maybe on the NewsHour. Some areas of the country where they're pushing solar heavily, especially areas like in Arizona where it works, the power companies just said, no, we don't want you on the grid. They refused to let them on the grid. I think in some overseas operations, this is particularly a problem because it's too much work to put you on the grid. So you can't even use the power you generate. I mean, you can use it immediately, but you can't store it in the system, which allows you to push your meter, make it go backwards and all this sort of thing. And I think this is going to be a huge problem as we go forward. So the counter to that is, who cares? We just have a battery.
Yeah, just have a battery and you'll store it and theoretically screw the electric companies.
You could.
Yeah. I had a guy come out to my house today. I was looking for a whole house generator on natural gas. So he comes out, he's like, you know, I know the guy told you initially it was like $8,000 with install. I'm like, uh-huh. Well, you know, if we put it over right here, about 10 to 11. I'm like, oh. But we can't do that because of this and that and this easement issues and all that. We'd have to go to the other side of the house. I think that's a good spot. Let's take a look. So I walk over with him. And he says, yep, we could do it. 14. I'm like, 14, 14 what? You know, what does that mean? It's 14 minutes to do this? What does it mean? 14,000 should take care of you. I'm like, listen, I'm sure you do a fantastic job at this. I'm not spending 14,000 on this. It's not happening. It has to be a major divisor of that. Nowhere near that am I spending that. So we got him down to, okay, well, maybe we could do a portable this. This is what I would do for my house anyway, he was going on. I'm like, well then why would you try to sell me the $14,000 one? Creep.
Sounds like a bunch of scammers down there in Florida.
Yeah. Well, in my area, I'm in an older part of Fort Lauderdale. Check this out. In the last major storm, my little area there was out of power for 45 days.
Oh, yeah. You can't afford that.
No. I didn't live there at the time. I lived out west where everything is buried underground, where the rest of the world could have been blacked out. I had power. It was unbelievable. Everybody else that I know... You have power. We're out of power. Four or five days. Six. Yep, I'm fine. No problem with me. Anyway, do you remember Louis Rukeyser from Wall Street Week?
Is he still alive?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, the guy he used to do Wall Street Week for PBS, and he was very pale and always looked like a kind of a zombie.
He looked a little bit like what was the guy from the horror movies?
Yeah,
Vincent Price.
I think Boris Karloff's even better.
Maybe.
And it looked to me as though his eyes were Photoshopped so they were upside down.
Well, now that we just... let's talk about his hair, why don't we? You know, I mean, that kind of fluffy gray thing that was sitting on top there. Well, it's off the air for many years. And he was, by the way, he was very dry, right? Would you agree with that? So... show's been off the air for many years, and now a couple of Wall Street guys are bringing it back. Wall Street Week, I think they're on the third or fourth show.
Why?
I'll tell you what I think, because I know these guys. One guy's name is Anthony Scaramucci, and he works for a group, it's a major hedge fund.
Scaramucci, isn't he one of the guys on Fast Money?
Yes, that's the guy. Yep.
Or whatever it's called.
Yep, he's on there every once in a while. The Mooch, they call him the Mooch. And what he did was he and another guy, I think they're the hosts of the show. But if you think about this, and I'm not sure exactly if it works like this, but he works as his group owns something called SkyBridge, and they have a fund to fund. So all these different mutual hedge fund managers that they will pick from and put inside of their fund from time to time. There could be 15 or 20 of them, let's say, right? So what he'll do, this is what I think, if this is what he did, is genius. He'll sponsor the whole thing. SkyBridge will sponsor the whole thing. He'll bring on all these hedge fund managers that are inside of his fund to talk and make it look like it's a non-paid thing. And because the way that this particular hedge fund is geared, you can invest in like, you know, $10,000 or $25,000 in it. Because it's also a mutual fund. You can do it a couple different ways to invest here. How great of an idea is that?
That's different.
So I think it's going
to
be on Fox.
It's just like a bunch of commercials, it sounds to me.
It's essentially an advertorial.
Yeah, an advertorial, yep. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of advertorials and advertisements, I got to tell you something. I almost lost it yesterday. I was trying to watch a video. You can't get away from the pre-rolls anymore. It's impossible to watch a video. without that 15-second thing that you have to watch, no matter what. It's annoying. Mm. Don't you think it's annoying?
I hate it. I don't. I hate those.
Yeah.
I don't mind the ones Google does where it says you can skip in 3 seconds or 5 seconds.
Right. But there's some of these places like CNBC and Bloomberg and all these now that they used to have, okay, you watch something and maybe it knows that you've seen an advertisement in the last 5 minutes, and then you go to something else and it maybe doesn't play it. But now every single one. And if you replay it, you got to sit through the advertisement again. That's just, you just know that they're just
being
jerks.
I watch a lot of stuff because I gather clips for the No Agenda show. I watch a lot of stuff on ABC Go and CBS Online and all the rest of it. And they have like interesting little stories. And the stories last a minute or two. And they have a commercial between each one. And they're not just a few seconds long. They're like 15 seconds, each one of them.
Right.
Maybe 30.
Yeah.
It's worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's very worse annoying than what you're complaining about. And since nobody buys these commercials from any of these networks, it's the same ad over and over.
Yep. Very annoying. I am going to, first of all, I put a Twitter post up that I said that I think we should ban the selfie stick, and now we should ban the pre-roll. Pre-roll and selfie stick in the same department to me. No. All right, the U.S. dollar is sinking. The euro is climbing. This is not exactly what they had in mind over at the ECB. Euro bonds are getting hit pretty hard. Check this out. Maybe some minds that are thinking a little bit more clearly are operating here. But listen to this. German 10-year, the 10-year Bund, or Bond, depending on how you want to say it. I wonder if in Germany, 007 was James Bund.
Yeah.
You think?
No.
German 10-year is now 0.45%. Okay, it's about a half a percent, we'll call it, right? That's what it yields. You buy it, get about a half percent. 2 weeks ago, it was 0.05%. That's an enormous move for a bond.
What?
So if you were to buy...
So it went from 0.5 to 5?
0.05 to
0.05 to
0.5.
It went from 0.05 to 0.5.
Yeah, that's enormous.
Yes, 10x.
Yeah. So this is kind of, and you can see what's happening in the German markets and a few things. I mean, German markets got just obliterated last week when this was happening. And today it was down about another 2.5%, another big move. And I'm not exactly sure what's going on, why they're selling, but it seems to me that a lot of people are starting to scratch their heads and say, you know what? Yes, the ECB is purchasing bonds. They're purchasing all of these various bonds from the European area for this quantitative easing program, but maybe it's got a little bit out of control. To have a 10-year bond of Germany...
Is it possible this is foreboding? This is the part of the bond crash that was predicted three years ago?
This is... Well, you have to remember, it got down to 0.05, okay? So the bond crash still hasn't happened. Can you imagine if we get it back to 2% on the 10-year? This is exactly what's happening. The problem is there's no really good way to short these bonds. There's no way. And a lot of players have been saying they want to short these, but the problem is that they have negative interest rates at the ECB, and you have to, if you do swaps and you do these different derivatives, you have to, you know, put money there, and then you lose money on that, so the whole deal doesn't work out. It's a real problem. Hmm. And they've done that on purpose, so you can't short them. Or you can't do that in a big way.
Well, that would exacerbate the problem if you could short them.
Right. You should be able to short them. Yeah, you should have two sides to the whole trade. But
yeah, you should be able to.
But that's what.
Are there puts and calls on bonds? This I don't know.
I don't think you could do that. It's the problem. There is no way to do this. There's no real good way to do it. I mean, you could. Yes, there are some mutual funds, maybe some ETFs that you could play with. But the problem is you also have the currency issue. So while the bond is going down, the currency is going up. So now you just negated the whole benefit. So then you got to hedge out the currency.
We have our euro, U.S. dollar, $1.08. What has this gotten to? $1.11?
Yeah, $1.12.
$1.12?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Yeah, I'm telling you, the last few days has been a little bit wanky. Well, wonky.
Crude oil's up to 60?
Yeah, where you been?
I don't know. Apparently I've been sleeping.
Yeah. It's been quite the week. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the crude dropping to 40. The dollar going to parity.
This is interesting that you mentioned that because everybody thinks this. Everybody's like, hey, you know what? The euro, everybody's on the side of the short on the euro. Everybody's on the long on the European stocks. Everybody's on the short on oil, and they just got plunked.
Crushed.
Yep. But that's what happens. This is something we've talked about so many times, that when everybody's on the same side of the boat, as soon as somebody walks to the other side, things get, you know, crazy. Too many people on the side.
Yeah, this is bad. The only good news is that I don't know if you even want to call it good news, is that the Japanese thing at $1.19 is ridiculous.
Hasn't moved.
Yeah, it just sticks there, which is a good number if you want to buy a Lexus.
Right.
And assuming they pass the savings along, which they doubt.
Nope. Probably not.
And gold hasn't done anything.
Gold has popped up a few times, came down. The thing about gold, which is interesting to watch recently, is when you see it starting to spike in the morning, I've seen this a few times, something's up. This whole thing with Greece, by the way, they're running to the end of their rope in terms of money. They have no resolution. The big kerfluffing that happened in I guess it was last week, when all the ECB ministers basically pointed a finger at the finance minister from Greece and said that he was an amateur gambler, wasting our time. And then the guy was supposedly pulled. And the prime minister said, hey, you know what? Or the president said, hey, you're out. But then he wasn't, and this whole thing. And they're still sitting there not making any kind of concessions, and they're getting closer and closer to bankruptcy.
I heard this guy give a little talk. It was on something on television. And I have to say, I was impressed after the talk. He has a really outstanding kind of a meta overview of what he thinks is going on. And it was very convincing. He's a good sales guy.
You're talking about
sells himself well.
Tsipras or Varoufakis?
No, the guy who was at the professor. The guy who always wears a leather jacket, drives a motorcycle. You know, that guy. I can't remember which of the two guys his name is.
Well, one's the president, prime minister dude, and one's the finance minister.
The finance guy.
Yeah, that's Varoufakis.
Yeah, Varoufakis.
If that's how it's spelled, that's how you say
he
it.
He really is an outstanding sales guy.
I think that Greece should have a competition, and there could be prizes awarded that would go back to the state. It would be a spelling bee for the Greek government's last names. People in the government's last names, spelling bee.
Oh, I wouldn't win.
When they start putting consonants together, it just, in, you know, four or five in a row, that's where the problems come in.
Yeah. Dutch names, Hawaiian names, yeah. Greek names, Russian names are all impossible.
Yeah, Hawaiian are more, aren't they more more vowels?
Well, laka. You pronounce them all.
Yeah. in a recent recent trade information suggests that the next revision to the latest GDP number will make it go into negative territory. We saw that last week the revision came out as a 0.2. Plus 0.2 versus, I don't know, we start off somewhere in the 1.5%, 2% range.
Now, this isn't good.
Yeah, no, here's what's interesting. This is a very interesting and very important point for everybody to listen to. Stocks are often priced in what we call PE. So the PE is, let's say, 17. And in good times, what happens is we get PE expansion. People are willing to pay more for growth on a stock, thinking that things are better and in the future it's going to get even better. I'm willing to pay more for that stock. What happens is in a recession, we're not there yet, but in a recession, stocks get repriced. PE ratios go down to like 14 almost immediately. I mean, you know, it's just like, okay, we're not going to pay that kind of money for the stock anymore. Everything may be exactly the same with earnings, with outlook, but all of a sudden there's a repricing of the forward PE because people are no longer willing to pay that kind of premium for the stock, thinking that, hey, things are not going to be so good for the long haul. So we have to keep a watch on that. Especially if we have a negative GDP print that comes out, which is very likely.
Yeah, they'll finagle it so it doesn't come out negative. Yep. I'm sure of it.
Yep. Want to talk to you about market volumes. You know how the fetching, and I've done some of it, about how, it was a good day, but market volume was down.
Yes, this is one of your basic two or three complaints.
I'm gonna retract.
Number two.
I did some more thinking about this. And I'm going to bring this back a little bit. One of the things is, if you figure that, let's take a stock. Apple would be a good example pre-split. But let's take Netflix as an example. Netflix. Let's say when Netflix was trading at $50 a share, okay? And Netflix is trading $50 a share, and it trades this enormous volume. You know, let's just pick a number. Let's say 5 million shares a day, okay? And now what's happening is that Netflix numbers are going down. No longer are they trading 5 million a day. Again, this is hypothetical. They're only trading 2 million shares a day. And we can see a progressively sloping down volume over time. But now Netflix is trading at $500 a share. Okay? You know, you got to think about that for a second. Maybe the reason the volume is not trading is because it's dollar value we should be looking at. Dollar value traded. If the stock is five times the price that it used to be, then we could say that it should be five times less the volume to equate to the same level. Does that make sense?
It's getting there.
So the same thing with the S&P 500. We see that volumes are coming down, but if the S&P 500 was priced, let's say, at 1,000 a number of years ago, and now it's 2,100, well, there's going to be less volume because people are still trading the same amount of money, or maybe a factor more, but not double.
I see what you're saying. You're looking at the cash flow only.
Yeah. Not the volume.
So you're seeing it as a fixed cash flow. In other words, there is X number of billions of dollars being traded. That doesn't go up and down much. So as the prices go up, that stays the same, creating a false appearance of scarcity in the stock.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I don't know. It's an interesting thing to chart.
Yeah. So instead of looking at just volume, let's look at the volume times the price and chart that.
So you're looking at money movement.
Yes. So let's just take some numbers. If we're trading the S&P 500 and we say, oh, volume is really reducing down. But meanwhile, we multiply it out. We find that more money is trading. I think that's a better signal of the truth of how things are moving.
Are you going to work on this?
I'm going to write this down. Hold on.
You're going to do what?
I'm going to write it down. We could use something like the SPY, 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 S&P 500, volume, total, with price. So I'll multiply that out. We'll see how that looks.
So what you would do then in your basic graph where you'd have this little candle going up and down, you would just use the money volume as the indicator instead of the actual volume.
Right. So we'll take the price of the shares times the volume, and that will be your new indicator.
No one's done that?
Maybe somebody's done. I know there are things that we look at. We look at the total shares traded for the day. There are indicators for that. But I think that nobody's really brought this out. Well, somebody may have. I haven't heard about it. To look at, you know, the other side of the equation when people are constantly complaining about volume.
This would be interesting for a couple of reasons. One, the one that immediately comes to mind is when we have a classic stock market collapse after a long bull market, it's because the public at large gets in. And this would be more indicative that you would see a difference than in the cash flow because of the public. And that would be very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a sell signal.
Yep.
And then I think you could rationalize it better because the way it goes now, at least the way I think of it, is the dumb public comes in and the smart money dumps all the stock on them and they let the whole thing collapse and then chuckles to itself. But there may be other factors at work. And if what you say is true, you could see because when the public comes in and it adds all that extra cash flow, it doesn't necessarily crash that day. It takes a while.
Right.
And you might be able to see that when the public comes in and they add this extra cash flow, that when the other people start pulling out, it could still maintain the prices, but you would see the cash flow drop because the smart money's getting out of these stocks.
Right.
Now, and then it's like pulling the rug out from under the whole thing at some point when the cash flow drops to a point where it can't sustain these prices.
There is a good friend of mine and an excellent market technician. His name is Tom McClellan. You may know him from the McClellan Oscillator and a lot of his other work that he does. Been on my podcast, The Disciplined Investor, quite often. One of the things that he looks at is the direction short and long for the S&P 500, and he looks at the volume, so the shares traded and actually the net assets of those funds, how much are in there as contrarian indicators. So you look how much money is actually at the end of the day, each day, in the short fund and how much is in the long fund. Mm-hmm. How much money is committed there and how it's going and how the, you know, how people are adding to it or subtracting from it, and looking at that as a contrarian indicator. It's only until you see a mushroom of money coming into the short side that you say, okay, well, we may be in an oversold situation when you combine that with a few other things. Similar to this, because when you think about that, the amount of assets that are in there is indicative of the same thing, about the money, the volume times the price per share. Same concept.
Yeah, it's definitely something worth charting and looking at and trying to come up with some conclusions. That is a new idea. I don't know if it's, again, I'm not sure there's a new idea. But if it was, then you probably have an advantage until somebody, you know, adds this as a regular. I mean, all these indicators, when they first come out there, they seem to work for a while and then they stop working.
It's gone. I'm going to talk to Tom McClellan about that.
Yeah, you should. See if you can work something up.
Let's see. We don't have much time left to show. There's so much to talk about here. Alibaba, the largest ape IPO ever, losing its luster. Shares now 78.5 after hitting 120 in late 2014. A company called Baidu, which is kind of the Google in a way of China, competing with them, coming out with something called Baidu Mall. And I think you have also the concerns about safety of products and, you know, other things. So IPO is getting hurt a bit. JetBlue Airways announced that Cuba Travel Services is going to start with direct charter flights from New York to Havana. Are you going to go to Cuba when it opens?
I'd like to get to Cuba. I can go there now as a journalist.
Oh.
I've always been able to go, and I've been wanting to go, and I just have not brought myself into going because I know it's going to be wrecked. Right now, it's still got the old Chevy.
You should go now. You should
funky.
Go.
I know. It's just, I'm disappointing myself by not going.
Let me ask you a question. What do you need to be a journalist? I mean, can you take, for example, your photographer with you? Or do I have to be credentialed? No, because you got to come right through Miami, probably.
I probably could take my photographer.
Do I need to be credentialed?
I don't know.
Well, why don't you think about this?
I think you can bluff your way on. But what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, what's the worst that could happen? Back on a raft. I mean, what could be problematic here?
I mean, you can always sneak into the country. I know somebody that was going for years, and they'd go up to... They either went down to Mexico and took a flight in, and they have all their papers, and then they throw the papers out when they get back. And some people go through Canada. You can get from Toronto. It's got flights, and you can just fly down there, and then you can just back into the country.
It seems so easy for non-Americans, non-U.S. citizens to get into our country, but I guess it's hard for citizens to get back in, huh?
It's hard to say. But you could get to Cuba if you want, but I know I can get legally. It's illegal, but I don't know what they've never thrown anybody in jail that I know of. I know people have gone there, but I can go there legally. So,
but what do you need? What I'm asking you is, what do you have? Do you have some kind of?
I have credentials in so far as my bio is concerned. I've written for all these financial publications. I still write for write for PC Magazine. That keeps me qualified. The blog itself, or this, what we're doing here, this podcast could qualify.
Well, there you go. So do we have to get like somebody to say we're qualified?
I have no idea. I haven't attempted to do this. So I don't know what the mechanism is.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to write this down.
I'm just very confident that I can do it.
All right. Well, I'm going to possibly push the buttons to get this going. DH Unplugged on the road. We're going to Cuba.
Going to Cuba.
There you go. We're going to Cuba. Woo-hoo! And you know, if we have to, we can take my boat.
I don't think so.
No? Not good.
We're not taking the boat.
All right. All right. So we'll take the plane. All right. Now, before we get to the stocks, I had some Twitter questions, but we'll hold those off right now. All right. Here's something I thought was interesting. The top 25 hedge fund managers are making nice money. And here's some article from MarketWatch or somewhere that looked at the value of money they were earning last year, 2014, I believe it was. $11.62 billion in total for the top 25 hedge fund managers, what they made personally. Some of it's made from fees, some of it's made on their own investments. But here's what the equivalents are. Equivalent to the income of 222,000 U.S. households based on the median income.
They're making good dough.
Yeah,
those
top
guys.
25 hedge
fund. They're buying, by the way, if you ever run into one.
Equivalent to an average hourly wage of $211,000 an hour for a 40-hour week. That's a good one, right?
Yeah, that's a beauty.
Enough to rebuild Nepal five times based on the damage estimate of $2 billion. Enough to buy 39 B-1B Lancer bombers. Enough to pay the salary of the President of the United States at his current rate of $400,000 for 27,500 years. That's pretty amazing.
It sounds like the business to be in.
Yeah, enough to pay the annual premium for full coverage of Obamacare for 2.99 million Americans. How do you like that? And you know, it's funny. Billions don't seem to be what they were used to be either. I'm still perplexed. I know I sound like my dad with the nickel pretzels and the seltzer for, you know, a quarter or whatever it was, but I just don't know when we went from 100 billion to a billion. I just don't remember that. It just happened one day.
Well, I witnessed the transition. When I was when I first got the PC magazine in 1986, Bill Ziff was a billionaire, is a bona fide billionaire. Bill Gates was a billionaire, and these guys were worth like a billion or two. And in the process, I decided to meet as many billionaires as I could, and I think I met half of them in the world. I met the guy who owned one of the billionaires worth $5 billion maybe. He owned Evergreen, the company, a shipping company out of Taiwan. I met him in China. I met Larry Ellison, who was a billionaire. Balmer was probably a billionaire. I knew him. But we're talking about just a few billion. Bill Ziff was worth a billion. And there was a number. You can count these guys. There was just a number of billionaires. There was the Sultan of Bahrain, you know, of Brunei. He was like one of them. And then the next thing you know, there's thousands.
I know.
Of them.
It just happened.
Just overnight, there's thousands of billionaires everywhere. These guys were walking into the money. It began with Netscape, and the IPO comes out, and all of a sudden, everybody that founded the company is worth billions. And it just got worse and worse. And during that boom of 99, 2000, 2001 crash, that's when a whole bunch of them cropped up. And they all became overnight billionaires, that which has made it very strange. That was unexpected. I never heard of such a thing.
What remind me what happened with Netscape?
With what?
Netscape.
Netscape was the, you know, the
I know what it is. What happened to it?
Well, now?
Yeah.
Oh, they were bought by, I believe, AOL.
Oh yeah, right.
And
right,
then they
right,
were right. folded in yeah, and right. they're still there, but it's just like a joke.
That was the one to use. I remember that. That was the first browser, wasn't it?
Well, the first browser was Mosaic.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And the guys who did Mosaic invented Netscape for the PC because Mosaic was an Apple product and Apple didn't care. They dropped the ball on that one. I've harped on this before because they believed they had their e-world was going to be as much better and AOL is in there. No one's going to overtake AOL. And so we're going to have e-world and MSN and all these online services, these information utilities, and the internet wasn't going to go anywhere. And so they went in that direction and then the internet took over.
I'm surprised that some people still have AOL. You know what somebody says, my address is Andrew Horowitz at AOL.com. Like, so you're over 60.
You're over 60 and probably a little dumb.
You know, I talked to some people I know. I'm not going to mention any names. And I said, he says, you know, I can't get the internet. My AOL is not working. I said, you know, you don't have to go through AOL to get to the internet. You can push the E on your computer or something like that. No, 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 no. You could only go through AOL to get to the internet. I'm like, no, but that's not true.
I don't even know you can still get to the internet through AOL.
Yep, they have some kind of thing.
I thought it was just a website.
And he has to get his mail through the AOL program. And this particular guy, it's my father-in-law. He's great, but you know he's 80 or something, and he's using it, and that's great. But like his computer doesn't work. Like his mouse doesn't work. He calls AOL.
Serves them right.
Seriously. Something's not right with my computer. I got to call AOL.
My mouse doesn't work. I'm looking for help.
Yep. All right, let's get to the stocks. Why don't we? And like I said, follow me on Periscope. And we'll try to live stream from my account next week when I get all these tools in there. We'll see how that goes. We're not doing video. I'll tell you right now. It's going to be audio only. Just saying.
Good.
Okay, so this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation. Please use very good financial advice from a professional before you invest in any of the stocks that we talk about. And of course, we are not recommending any of these. We will note if we own these on the list here. You can find all of these on a live spreadsheet that updates over on dhunplugged.com. And of course, if you want to follow me, Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, John C. Dvorak is the real Dvorak. And of course, he has, what do you have, the Dvorak channel?
Channel Dvorak.
Channel Dvorak.
Which
channel,
I think is down. I wouldn't push anyone.
Don't. All right, we're not pushing anybody there. You got, of course, the fabulous show with Adam Curry, two times a week. You can't miss that. I'm starting to get, I got to ask you something. People are starting to give me a fist bump amen or an amen fist bump something or other. What is that?
Fist bump amen.
What is it?
That's a meme we caught. This started as a clip that Adam found. He was an interview with some CNN woman, some talking head, talking to one of her, somebody in the box, yakking away. And they're giddy, these two. And at the end of the interview, she says goodbye. Or he says something, made some comment. She says, oh, that's great. Amen, fist bump. That's what she said.
So it is a congratulatory, I agree with you. I'm glad you said it.
And you say fist bump instead of, you can't do it because the guy's in the box. He's in some, remote location.
Right.
And so she says, amen, fist bump. And so when Adam played that, I was just floored because who would say something so stupid?
Right, right. Kisses.
And it became a meme. And so now people say it constantly.
Yeah, constantly. I'm getting pictures from people.
Yeah, amen, fist
bump. I get some kind of this guy, Barnell, he sends me a picture with a fist. It says amen on it. I'm like, I guess that was good. I'm not in the loop.
These things take on a life of their own.
It seems that way. All right. So, and then somebody said the
yeah, no. That's just something.
No. I'm getting all these, it's like all this pass through stuff is coming through all of a sudden. I don't know what's going on.
Anyway.
Okay. Anyway, you got to listen to the No Agenda show, which has no agenda. It's on Thursdays and Saturdays. Thursdays and Sundays. Streams live.
And download as a podcast. Download as a podcast. Listen to it live.
Yep. All right. So that's all of, I think we got everything out there, right? The Disciplined Investor podcast, we said all this. Okay. That's good. Now, just to kind of go over these very quickly, still the same names. We have a couple more weeks where we're going to keep these names on, then dump a lot of them. But most of the names still on. Genosia was stopped out. There was a couple of bad days on the Genosia Biosciences for an 8% loss. Seattle Genetics is down 6%. Apple up 2%. Mondelez actually had a good few days there. There was some talk about maybe some buyouts and all that. Up. Your TBT is up, which is the ultra short bonds. Remember, I'm telling you what's happening with the bonds recently, and they're starting to move in the opposite direction, which is interesting. Even on a bad day today in the markets, they were selling the bonds, which is interesting. Bank of New York up 15%. The short of the short of Doug, the ultra short oil and gas. Gas has been, oil prices moving up. Well, this is
that was shorting. A good call. I would have never, I was against it.
Yep. Up 17%. More of the recent things that are happening, we finally got some nice move of the ProShares ultra short NASDAQ biotech up 4% today. So that's about a break even right there. Yin, the short of Yin. So we're shorting the long three times bull China, which was then down 10% today because China was off by about 3% last night, up 5.83%. Netflix, ding, 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 the day before earnings come out, up 17.6%, and on a bad tape today, up 2%. Very nice. John's call there.
I've been good. Netflix has been good to me on this game.
Yep, it has.
Both ways.
Yep. Full Circle Capital not doing anything. Meet not doing anything. Oh, let's look at IBM. Where's IBM? IBM. Where's that damn stock?
Oh, Meet Me is still. I mean, this is a penny stock that it's not doing anything is fine.
Yep.
Because when it goes, it's going to go, or just sit there crap out like IBM.
Yeah, IBM just nothing. Now, I have a pick for tomorrow.
Right.
Now this is a stock that has been obliterated. Okay, it was.
Oh, you're bringing back triple D.
Yeah, not because I like it.
But I think it's a good company. I think it's a long term investment for somebody who just wants to put some money in it.
Now it was down to I think $23.85 or something like that. It was down pretty low. I was thinking about actually buying a call, but then I realized that earnings are coming out tomorrow morning before the market opens. Mm. Now, the other company that it's in competition with, Stratasys, got just its head handed to it last week with earnings. 3D Systems a few weeks ago came out with pre-earnings announcement of some horrible numbers, just terrible, just all sorts of nasty stuff. There was an announcement today about some kind of deal they have with some company in China and a few other things. And the thing is that the 3D space, the more it comes down, the more I get interested in it, because it seems to me that it's going to be cherry picking for like an HP. These guys are going to just cry uncle eventually and maybe take a nice piece of a buyout here. This is a great
company. That's a great thought. Yeah, you know? I think you're right.
Yeah, so there should be some consolidation as these things come down and the companies get squeezed. And you know, if you roll a 3D systems into HP, cuz HP still has not really come up with a 3D printing system that's I think competitive. Then HP, for example, gets to market this darn thing to their entire database, all their customers.
Yeah, no, HP would be ideal. Yep. To buy this.
Yep. So we'll see what happens.
I think that's a great pick. I mean, I think of doing that real portfolio. That's a nice idea.
Yeah. This is the one thing that I'll mention. I had, by the way, last week or 2 weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago, I had the call option on this with the same thesis, by the way. The option was up like 700% in one day because it moved all the way up. I sold it, actually broke even, maybe made a couple of bucks on it, very, very small. And I was thinking if it gets below 25 again, I was going to look to buy another call on this with the buyout thesis, but the earnings are coming out, so I'll wait till after earnings are done and we get some, you know, more information. Yeah,
right, you'd be safer.
Yep. What do you got?
So I have one.
Okay.
Now, the reason there's another insider.
Yeah.
And this is a stock, you got to look at the chart of this thing. This is a stock that just looks like crap. And then there was a screwy little thing that happened at the bottom of the decline. It was going down forever. It's got, let me take a look at some of the numbers. It's only got a $90 million market cap. It's American Semiconductor. And the stock is AMSC.
AM?
AM. American Semiconductor, SC.
AMSC. Enter.
It's got... I don't know anything about the company.
Okay.
It's been, there's some initial guys looking at it because the price is so low. So we have like a bunch of analysts that are in on it now. There was a downgrade. There has really, the only action, the recent action is August of last year. And it was a buy at $2.10. But one of the guys who is the insider that I'm looking at here, has a good track record. He's not one of those guys who keeps buying into the down. You know, it's down more. This is Kevin Douglas, and he bought a bunch of it. Let's see, I think he paid $6.
This is kind of funny, by the way. You don't know what they do, right?
No. I'm just going with the chart.
You're
going
to like what it does. It dovetails into a discussion we had. Okay?
All right.
So, the company has a grid business segment and enables electric utilities and renewable energy product developers to connect, transmit, and distribute power. In the wind market, the company allows manufacturers to field wind turbines through its power electronics, engineering, and support services. In the power grid market, the company allows electric utilities and renewable energy project developers to connect, transmit, and distribute power through its transmission planning services and power electronics and conductor-based products. This is what we just talked about with the solar power.
Okay, it could be a buyout candidate. So we have a double bottom on this thing after it went down from like $22 a share down to $6. And double bottom at $6. And then it started creeping up a little bit. Then it took a huge spike up. And when I see this particular pattern, I'm thinking somebody bought for some reason because they know something. Mm. But there was no support for this from the general investing public. So after this guy, whoever it was, bought a crap load of stock, spike the volume, they just drop back down and it is a falling knife kind of thing, as you would, whatever it's called. And it just banged down at the bottom there at 667. And it's sitting there now. And this guy, this insider, who has a great track record, he always buys low and sells high. It's none of the buying into, the, you know, the buy it and then it goes down and buys more. No, it's none of that. And so I think this is a good pick. I think this is something up with this company.
Yeah, I'm looking to see what it says. The U.S. Navy created a sole source solicitation notice for its temperature semiconductor equipment that day when it spiked. The contract was expected after additionally is established a relationship with the Navy to develop an HTS power cable hardware for shipboard power applications. Well, that's kind of interesting. Kind of have like solar power and stuff like that on these ships. And maybe they are creating something for that.
Why not?
Yeah, what the heck? Or for that matter, turbine power. You have a ship that's going in the water. You put some kind of weird turbines on it that creates energy that feeds back to the boat to create energy.
That could be.
That's a good idea. When are they going to come up with the driverless Navy ships?
Just send them out robots.
By the way, have you heard of these the drones that are becoming like Peeping Toms?
The little ones?
Yeah, the people are just
they've been around for a while.
Parking outside of people's windows.
Yeah, they just sit there, look inside, see what's going on.
All right, so we're going to add this to the list. Let me just put this here.
I think, by the way, people should, that a good company to start and invest in would be a company that has like netting on the around the outside of the roofs. And if you had one of those drones, it would throw a net out of the top of your house and capture the drone because it would drop on top of it and bring it to the ground.
One of those nets that has like the weighted balls on the outside.
I don't even think you need that with one of these. Once those propellers stop with the net because of the net, the thing would drop like a rock.
Mm. Or just spray it with something. Yeah, spray it with some kind of.
Yeah. Hairspray.
Yeah, just spray it with some.
Like you can do this with a fly. You know, a fly is flying around. You can't seem to find any way of killing it. You spray hairspray on the fly, and he says he flies through this cloud of hairspray. The spray gets on their wings, and they lock them up, and
nice.
The fly goes right to the ground.
Yeah, so you do something like that, or you do. I have a fly right here in my office. I need to put some hairspray on.
I think
you said the word fly. There's a fly coming into my office.
Crazy string.
Oh, yeah.
You see the drone out there and you get that crazy string stuff, you know, that kids use.
Right.
And just nail the thing. It'll just be covered with this goop and fall right to the ground.
Very nice. All right. Well, that's going to end our discussion for this episode of DH Unplugged. Of course, you can find all the information on the website. You can on dhunplugged.com. And we want to wish you a very happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yes. All right, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.